This is a Collider.com audio interview.
It's a nice jacket.
Thank you very much. Very proud of this jacket.
What is it?
It's an Armani, believe it or not.
But I mean, how is it shiny like that?
I have no idea. I'm trying to... It looks a bit like fur, yeah. Exactly. It's all about the clothes these days.
I've got to ask an overriding question on this. Do you... This was like the first political campaign in a way where they, you know, they got petitions and they sent out leaflets and they got buttons. If we... He had today's modern media, do you think the word would have spread faster and it all would have been over faster, or people just were too indifferent? I mean, I'm just... If, you know, he had Anderson Cooper going to one of these slave ships, camera, would this have been over faster?
Well, you know, the funny thing is, we have that capacity now in this day and age to highlight these issues, and we do get to see them on our screens in CNN, and Anderson Cooper does, you know, expose us to some of these atrocities which continue to happen today. So, in answer to your question, I mean, we haven't really learned much since that period, really. You know, I think unless we are presented by it every day and bombarded by it, and unless it sort of physically affects us, we're very quick to brush it under the carpet.
So bringing people to that slave ship to physically smell that smell was more impact than watching it on a picture box.
Absolutely. I mean, that's that they had to find out a way of exposing it and bringing it to light. And they had to expose it to Wilberforce himself, because he wasn't, he was aware of it, but he wasn't sort of convinced of it until, you know, he needed to experience it himself, as it were.
How familiar were you with the story from school, history, lessons, whatever?
To be perfectly honest, I was slightly ignorant to the whole story, whether that was me not paying attention or, you know, it passed me by. But certainly in British education, he is renowned, yes, as and remembered as being this politician that abolished the slave trade. Although I think here he's more of a footnote as far as the abolitionist history over here.
That took us longer.
Well, someone like that, I mean, have you ever been someone like that, that, you know, that not that you've stood up for slavery, but I mean, that you stood up for someone or stood up for a group or...
You know what, I'll be perfectly honest, I mean, I'm not one of those brave souls, actually. I'm probably not necessarily a leader in that sense. I mean, and that's what makes these people stand out from the rest of us, is that they do have the courage and bravery to be that lone voice, and then, you know, the rest of us can get on the bandwagon. So it's a tough thing to admit that.
Getting up and singing Amazing Grace, that was you, correct?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yes. Very, very proud of that.
Did you ever at any point say, get somebody else in here to do this, or were you challenged to do it?
Well, to be honest with you, I think that I am a bit of a singer. You know, coming Welsh, coming from Wales, you know, and being Welsh, we all very proud of our singing heritage. So, but it's odd, and Michael acted, and the producers never asked me, actually, if I could sing. And then it came to that morning, and they were all going, shit, everyone's got to sing. What are we going to do? But luckily, yes, I wowed them all with it.
Did you have a coach, or did you already...
Well, funnily enough, I got my old singing coach from drama college, who I hadn't seen for 10 years since I left drama college. I called him up and asked him to help me out with the singing.
Okay. Are the British more comfortable doing period pieces?
Well, I know I am as comfortable doing period as I am contemporary, because I suppose we grow up with it in the sense, in the theatre. You know, we do get to put on costumes and play a lot of period dramas or plays. So, yes, we're exposed to it a little bit more, I think, because of our theatrical background. And I love it because, you know, you put a costume on or a wig on, or you're suddenly somebody else already. You know, it's like playing as a child. You know, you put on a cape or a jacket, or you know, your father's jacket or your grandfather's, and suddenly, you know, you're able to play being that old man or whatever. You know, it's just any prop or something like that, it sort of ignites some sort of imagination in you. Yeah.
One of the other things that's not emphasized, but I'm a big animal advocate, so I have to say it's really cool that he also started the SPCA, or the world version of it, and you know, I guess that's true, that he had a bunch of pets in his house. I have to ask a childish question. Do you have any pets?
No, I don't.
Can't, because
no.
You have worked too much.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know what, I've never been around pets. We didn't have pets as a child.
That's sad.
I always had this image of, you know, if I would have a pet, it would be free to roam the fields. You know what I mean? I'd have to live on a farm, really.
Did you find that in your research that? Did you discover that, or the screenwriter already knew all about
it? That was already in the script.
That's like a subtext.
Yes, it is.
It's
a big part of his life. When you read about him, yes, his house was filled with either people that he was, looking after, or because he was an incredibly rich guy. You have to remember that he was an incredibly wealthy man, so he was able to be such a philanthropist. Yeah.
So everything, taking care of everybody.
I know. Amazing.
We were told that the film's been done for a little while. How long ago did you film this film?
We shot it. We finished this time last year, so it's been ready for a good 6 months. But I think it's very quick from its conception, from shooting it to coming out. Process. From shooting it, it's not that long of a break, really.
I thought it might be closer to when you were filming the first FF movie. I was curious about
it. No. I'd shot the first FF movie, and that had already come out, because I don't think I would have got this part had it not been for the success of the first FF movie, actually, to be honest with you.
Even with Hornblower, you wouldn't have gotten this part, because that proves...
Well, I suppose, I could prove, till I'm blue in the face that I could play the character, but, the powers that be, producers, they need an established name and numbers and figures, because that's the name of the game this day, Thank the Lord for Fantastic Four, yeah.
I was going to say, did you ever think that Mr. Fantastic was going to let you play a period piece?
But it's extraordinary, isn't it, that people say, wow, this is a great diverse, and I'm like, well, this is what I've been grew up on, is playing Hornblower and Pip and the Foresight saga, so it's my sort of stock and trade, really. But yes, I'm playing a superhero in a blue spandex suit has allowed me to come back to what I do best. It's amazing.
But if you look at it, it's kind of the same. I mean, they're both leaders.
Yeah.
In a way.
Yeah, you're right.
You see similarities in that?
Well, yes, absolutely. I mean, the reason I'm attracted to these projects and over the years is because they are such great characters. They're great heroic figures. And producers are now realizing, if I'm the go-to guy for any hero that you want to play.
So,
it's
the next superhero movie?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I have to open the door and ask about Fantastic
Four. Oh, absolutely, absolutely.
So, what are you allowed to tell us now that information has been trickling out about the film?
Well, I had a phone call this morning from Fox saying, will you stop talking about the movie so much and stop ruining it for everyone? So what I can tell you is that, well, obviously the title suggests The Rise of the Silver Surfer, and that's it. No. The beginning of the movie, we are embracing our powers, we're just sort of coping with living in the public eye. So that's an exciting element of it, and there's an aspect of the movie where we sort of toy with the idea of not being superheroes anymore, because it's such a responsibility. And then, of course, the Silver Surfer arrives, and the whole world is looking to us to help save it again. But as far as a movie, I think it's a much better movie than the first one, because the first one was a sort of an origin movie, so we're trying to sell it to a wide audience, not just cater for the fans. So I think the fans were slightly disgruntled with the first one because it took so long to get into it, and we were working out the difficulty of presenting four or five different effects together, working simultaneously. And so this one, we start the movie with a bang, and it doesn't relent until the end. It's a real roller coaster of a ride.
Is there any worry, though, that there's already four of you and Dr. Doom, you throw in Silver Surfer and Galactus, that it could just be too much?
I don't know. We've established Dr. Doom and the four of us, so that's fine. I think the Silver Surfer is such a great character. You need somebody of that nature to come and, steal our thunder. Do you know what I mean?
Did you watch the trailer that they released?
Yeah.
What do you think about how they're pushing an action sequence rather than trying to do a whole bunch of little things?
I think it's very smart of them. I think it just proves how far the movie, our franchise has come from that origin movie. Now the movie's full of those sequences. So I don't know. I mean, they know best how to market these things and get, you know, bums on seats.
I was going to say I thought the trailer was excellent, but how is Tim as a director changed?
I think he's a lot more confident now. I mean, as we all are, we're sort of sitting comfortably in the skin of our characters. We know each other. We're friendlier. I mean, we're friendlier. What I'm trying to say, we're because we are friends. It's made it easier to work. Together, you know, when we did the first movie, we were just figuring each other out, and Tim also. But now we're a family. We can give us a lot of confidence to do this movie.
You mentioned some of the disgruntled fans of the first film. Did you take that at all personally?
No, you can never do that. I mean, I don't listen to that. You're never going to please everyone. I mean, as an actor, I've always said half the audience is going to love you, half of it is going to hate you. So, you know, just live with it. It's easier that way.
Were you ever concerned? Did you ever have any doubt that there'd be a number two?
Oh, certainly there was doubt. I mean, you don't know. You sign up for three movies, and of course you wish to do the three. But it is a business, and it is all dependent on the box office. And you know, thanks to the fans and the general movie going public, you know, the movie was a success.
I've got a wild question. In the superhero world, who they haven't done yet would you like to play? And as a historical character, who would you love to play?
Well, in the comic book world, I'm afraid I'm not well versed. I'm not an authority on comic books. I didn't read comic books as a child, so I'm sort of introduced to this via the Fantastic Four, actually. I don't really have an image or a person from a comic book world that I'd love to play. In history, gosh, I don't know. John F. Kennedy, I don't know.
Wow, that'd be wild.
Yeah.
I think you wrapped at the end of last year.
Have you
started working on anything else yet?
No, I haven't actually. I've been promoting this over the country the last 2 weeks, and next month we go to Britain with it and Europe, and then after that we'll start promoting TV set. And then after that, it'll be the Fantastic Four. So I'll be travelling around the world promoting. And unless I get a peachy job, of course.
So you're on the TV set?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Who do you play
there? I play a British executive who's been brought in to bring a bit of class to the whole proceedings. But of course, he tries to stamp his authority on it and be all about integrity. And of course, he sort of devolves into this character that's interested in numbers and figures, and so we see his sort of demise.
Now, what was going to a comedy like after doing so many action and period pieces?
I loved the opportunity. I mean, that's why I fought tooth and nail to get into that movie, because I read it and I just immediately put it down. They'll never consider me for this, you know. And then they couldn't find the guy, and funnily enough, an assistant to Vin Diesel, who's now Jake's assistant, said, listen, I know this great actor, Ewan Griffith, because Vin is with my manager. And he said, what about this guy? And he's like, what, Mr. Fantastic? Now forget about it, you know. And he said, well, listen, I'll just sit down with him. I think, you know, he's a good British actor. And so I did. I sat down and persuaded Jake to give me the part by reading and proving that I could do it. So
now that you're... Now that you've been in such a hit movie, are people universally pronouncing your name correctly?
Yes, slowly but surely, yes. I mean, and listen, to be fair, I mean, I can understand it. On the page, it doesn't leap out phonetically, so it's just a matter of educating people.
I've got the first name right, but I still don't have your last name.
Oh, Griffith. It's just
like Griffith.
Griffith.
Okay.
Yeah, exactly. It's just...
Sorry.
No, it's fine. No, I mean, listen, it's just spelt in the Welsh language, and it's...
Oh, that's
fine. So it's just, you know, it's a daily... occurrence, when I, you know,
I'm
booking everything.
Your name just because it's so frustrating. I'm not saying you should. I just
no. To be honest, I was, you know, from the very word go, I was. No, I'm not going to change my name. It's not going to stand in my way, and you know, so far so good.
Would you consider the second Fantastic Four? Would you say that's a bigger scale movie?
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. Absolutely on every level. There's so many more effect shots in this movie compared to the first one.
Was it a harder shoot?
It was hard because of the weather in Vancouver. It was sort of slightly harder this time around. There was a lot of exteriors. But it was a lot more, it was more fun of a shoot because we were all so more comfortable with one another, you know, being around one another. So
I was going to say that with the success of Ghost Rider over the weekend, which made an ungodly amount of money, is the studio showing you even more love? You know, are they...
Fox, you mean?
How has Fox been in comparison to the first film?
I haven't heard a word from them until this morning when they said stop talking about the movie. So they're obviously, I think it's no news is good news, because last time round, you know, they were on the phone almost immediately, right, reshoot, we've got to fix this, we've got to fix that. So this time round, I guess they're sitting on something really special, I don't know.
So you weren't joking, you actually got the mandate from them.
Yes, I mean, what was happening was I was starting to just get excited because my mind was in this, and then somebody, you know, inevitably asked me about it, and I'd go, oh, yes, blah, 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 and then realize, shit, I shouldn't have said that. That's spoiling the whole movie, and now nobody needs to come and see it.
We gotta go listen.
So, was there one straw that broke their back? They said, okay, that stop saying that.
Well, if I talk about it, then I'm...
Well, no, I mean...
It's too late now. What I'm saying is that there is a presence of Galactus. That's all I'm allowed to say.
And they didn't like that
I was... Yeah, exactly.
That's kind of been getting out there, though, with or without you.
I know. It's like they told me, don't talk about Doug Jones as a Silver Surfer. You know, he's not. I'm like, what?
He's talking about the.
He's credited as the Silver Surfer on IMDb.
Well, he told us about it.
I know. Yeah. I think it's to the detriment of the movie that they should be celebrating that Doug Jones is playing the Silver Surfer and brought this great character to life.
And Pan's Labyrinth.
I was actually going to let's talk about Doug Jones for a second. Yes. As Silver Surfer, what was it like working with someone who is so talented?
Exactly. That's what I thought. He was sort of underappreciated because they were saying, "Oh, don't mention Doug." You know, just said, "No, Doug has brought this character to life," and they're just manipulating what he did on the set. You know, they're putting the sheen on him. I thought he was wonderful. I mean, so majestic, and you know, when you meet him, he's such a like a beanstalk of a guy, isn't he? And but he's just his movement is fantastic. He's breathtaking. And when I saw Pan's Labyrinth, I was like, that's you. It's beautiful. So I just wanted him to have his credit, really, where credit's due.
How does a British audience react to you in a Fantastic Four movie compared to you in a period piece?
That's interesting. I haven't really spent any time in the UK since Fantastic Four came out. I mean, I did shoot this movie there. But I suppose it, you know, goes hand in hand for them, for me to be seen in frocks and wigs.
Yeah. I mean, do they have a different reaction? I mean, just in general, just do the British people have a different reaction to movies like that?
I think we're probably more used to it. Yes, I mean, you know, it's part and parcel of our sort of heritage, you know, in literature and film and television. Yes, and because of the theatrical background, we're all sort of more aware of. More used to then period dramas, but I mean the response for Fantastic Four, I mean primarily is from kids coming running up to you and wanting to pull your arm and see if it stretches. You know, but it's nothing. To think that I've affected somebody in that way. I mean, as a child, that's why I wanted to be an actor. The magic of movies, like, wow, he made me feel this way. You know, that's why I wanted to do this movie, because when I read the movie, I was bawling my eyes out at the end of reading it because of what he'd achieved, that feeling of that sense of relief. So I wanted to be that actor that affected me as a child, you know, so I got my chance to create that bit of movie magic. So when you see the wonderment in a kid's eyes, you know, they're so nervous and tentative because they can't quite believe it's you, and obviously disappointed that I can't.
Wait, I have just a silly question about the character. So did he want to be a minister? And they're trying to even this out so we're not pushing the Christianity over the bar. But so he was deciding whether he was going to be in politics or join the church?
Absolutely.
Okay, so that wasn't clear whether he wanted to be a minister or he just was...
Well, yeah, I mean, what he said was, you know, to praise God, whatever that means, either becoming a meditative, you know, monk or whatever, or a preacher, I don't know. But certainly in history, William Pitt the Younger, the Prime Minister at the time and his best friend, wrote him a letter asking him to reconsider, to use, because he's such a great politician. He was getting so far in politics. So please don't give up that, because surely, the religion can lead to action as well as meditation. And those are his words, so we're lifting his words from that letter to use it in the script. Well, yes, absolutely. Yeah, indeed.
I'm sorry to go back to this, but you said you're not filming anything for a while. You're doing a lot of promotion. Has Fox already said to you if FF2 does really well that it's going to be really jump right back into FF3? Have they already talked to you about that?
You know what? It's certainly when we were shooting the movie that you get that sense. Yes, that they want to try and complete this franchise, I'll open my mouth because I know.
Movie ends, and let me say that perhaps the movie ends in a way that you might want to see a third movie.
Perhaps it does. No, everyone's aware that, we've all signed the 3-picture deal, and absolutely, I'd love that to happen. And you know what? They probably know now how it's going to perform, such as the tracking, and they have an idea of,
So would it be safe to assume that perhaps Fox is working on a third script as we speak?
I'm sure of it. They must. If they had half a brain, they should, yes. Yeah.
I was going to say, without saying anything, have you seen... No. Have you seen the movie? Have you seen...
I haven't seen a frame of it, no. Okay.
Not even dailies?
I saw a little bit of dailies, but, it's somebody standing next to you with a green suit or a tennis ball with an X on it, I haven't seen any of it put together. But that's the exciting aspect of making a movie like this, that I'm like an audience member when I see it for the first time, because I'm like, wow, I can't believe they'd make me stretch and do that. And there were bits in the first movie that they manipulated me entirely. There's a scene in the Baxter building where Dr. Doom is throwing lightning bolts at me, and when he eventually throws me out the window and I'm hanging off the side of the building, I remember shooting the bit when he threw lightning bolts at me and pretending to avoid them, and they put that effect on. And then from then on, I run to the window and fall out the window. I never did that. It was digital as a digital me. Amazing.
That's scary.
I didn't do any of that.
So seeing stuff like that,
it is breathtaking. It really is. Yeah. It really is. It's really impressive. And this movie, the difficulty with this movie, that every frame the Silver Surfer is in, even just as a character talking, is an effect. So it's costing fortune.
Are you living here now? You said you haven't been in the UK in a long time.
No, yes, because I live here, forgive me. Yeah, I moved here about four or five years ago. Yeah.
And I guess I should ask, close to the end, what's it like being a toy?
The coolest thing ever. I can't tell you. I collected all those Star Wars figures when the Star Wars came out, and I remember one of my first toys that I got was a little action figure of Superman about this high. And my mum had gone to London to see a play or something, and she brought us back a little toy, and I treasured that thing so much. And if I'd known then that I would one day become a figure, I'd have flipped out.
Are you kind of upset because it doesn't look like you, or you think it looks like you?
I think it looks very much like me. I think they've got the proportion of the nose perfect. So they've got a big clonk on him, yeah.
Oh. Have you seen the upcoming toys with you guys in a car and...
No. I think this time, I know it's a different company that's making the toys. Hasbro, I think, yeah. But I've seen, ideas and approving, my likeness or whatever, yeah.
They didn't take the...
Well, I think they're using the scans from the first movie, yeah. We did hours and hours of scanning again this time, sorry.
I've seen you in a car. There's all of you in
the car. Oh, the fantastic car.
Yes. Yeah.
Have you? As a toy?
It's coming.
I've seen it. They've shown the prototype of what it's going to be.
Oh, is it online?
There's something called Toy Fair, which just happened.
Does it look good? Do you think kids are going to want to buy it?
From the picture, it looks like the all four of you can be in a car.
Beautiful. Yeah. It's a stunning looking car.
It
really is.
How it looks in the movie.
Brilliant. Yeah. It's absolutely stunning. Honestly, it was like a playground ride, It was put on a gimbal and was able to do all this and really fast, and you know, we had to be strapped in. It was just terrible. Yeah. All right.